I'm talking today to Dr. Glenn Johnson, whiskey serial golf Juliet. We reached him at his home in Beniche, Minnesota. Glenn, thank you for joining the show.
Good morning.
You are co-leader of a forthcoming amateur radio expedition, or de-expedition, to a place that ranks top high in the list of most wanted radio countries, or rather DXCC entities, although it is not a remote coral reef somewhere in the Pacific, but an island just a short boat ride off the coast of Puerto Rico?
The island is called Desecheo. That's Delta Echo Sierra Echo Charlie Hotel Echo Oscar. Desecheo, which is about 14 miles off the northwest corner of Puerto Rico. It's a U.S. possession.
Desecheo was included to the DXCC countries list in 1979 and has been activated since then a dozen times, but not so in the past 15 years. Why?
The reason is it's controlled by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and there are two reasons for Desecheo. There's another similar DXCC entity, Kilo Papa One or Navassa Island, which is between Jamaica and Haiti, and both of these islands are administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Both have a very unique flora and fauna, and are preserved by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and there's very limited access for that. In addition, Desecheo was used as a bombing and target range by the U.S. Navy back in the late 1940s, early 1950s, and there's a lot of unexploded ordnance felt to be on Desecheo, and the biggest reason why access has not been granted to Desecheo is because of safety reasons for people who might land on the island and stumble or dig, or let's say we want to put an antenna stake down to support an antenna, and we might hit some unexploded ordnance, and that would be history. So there's been very limited access to Desecheo. In fact, our dates that we have been assigned is February 12th to the 26th of 2009.
All kind of lobbying was done for years to go to Desecheo. The House of Representatives even passed a bill supporting the idea. How and why do you think that you succeed where others failed?
Over the years, there have been many people who have applied, and about 7 or 8 years ago, there was a group of us that lobbied a U.S. congressman, and there was a bill before the U.S. Congress to allow regular access by anyone, not just amateur radio, just to allow access to qualified groups. It passed the U.S. House, but by the time that was done, the session was over, and basically the bill died for lack of being able to progress. And our group persisted, and finally we met actually several times with U.S. Fish and Wildlife personnel, and the agreement we came up with is that the squeaky wheel gets greased. They put out a notice for applications, and several dozen people who had applied over the years received applications, and we had to get in line with everyone else and fill out an application process, and there were several criteria that had to be met. We had to have only so many people. We had to be sensitive to the environment. Just many requirements that had to be met, and there were actually seven groups that applied, and there were, as I understand from the impartial panel that met to blindly go over these applications, ours was the one that was accepted out of seven that were submitted. So, you know, it could have been another group that would have been doing this, but it was our group that was selected to go.
Well, congratulations. You will have to undergo a special training even to be allowed to embark on the island?
Yes. Everyone that goes on the island has to have, there's a course by some U.S. military personnel on unexploded ordnance training. So we have to spend a day learning how to deal with unexploded ordnance. And part of the requirements, we have to have the area swept by, I think we have so many meters along the beach, and then there's a helipad on the northwest side of the island, and we can operate 200 feet from the helipad. And this area has been and will be swept again by the minesweeping operation. And we have to take a mine detector with us. We have to set little red flags and markers where our boundaries are, and no one can go beyond these limits because it's theoretically like an active minefield. So we have very limited access to the island. The dates correspond with another activity on the island. There's some research going on at another part of the island, and the Fish and Wildlife only wants people on the island at one time. So that's why we had to coordinate our dates in February. It wasn't necessarily our choosing, because we were available to go, but this research group had limited dates. And then the Fish and Wildlife had to coordinate their security personnel to go with us. And then we had to coordinate it with the research people have to undergo this unexploded ordnance training too. So it was a coordination problem getting our dates lined up.
So I take it you're going by boat. You will not take the helicopter, which means you have to carry up a ton of equipment uphill?
Yes, it's not terribly steep. The beach is probably 15 meters wide, 10 to 15 meters wide, but it's rocky and uneven, and there's a little tiny cove that makes a nice landing place. And the operating site is about 500 to 600 meters along this beach. If the sea is very calm, we could land right near the operating site, but most of the time there's a little cove, and about 500 or 600 meters we have to carry all of our gear. So it will be a workout. And the biggest problem with Desecheo is it's very, very hot, and there's no natural shade. That's our biggest environmental factor, is just heat and sunburn and keeping hydrated because of just the incredible heat that's there.
The dates, as you mentioned, have been fixed, and you're probably preparing a big-scale expedition, 15 operators, all bands, all modes.
That's right. We're allowed 15 operators on the island at one time. We're going to do something a little unique. Several of the operators, and as it turns out, myself included, because of work commitments, can't be there the whole time. And so halfway through the operation, we're going to switch operators. The Fish and Wildlife has allowed us one operator shift. So about half of the crew will leave halfway through the operation and be replaced by new people. We haven't announced all of our team members yet because there's still a couple people that are checking on their dates. But hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have our team and dates, the people who can go on the team, announced.
Let us keep guessing. As a general rule, there are always three main target areas, two of which are always more or less easy to reach from any place, and one that is more difficult. What do we have to expect propagation-wise?
We'll have propagation to North and South America on at least three or four bands, 24 hours a day. Desecheo is ranked number 7 on the most wanted list overall, but that's probably because of North America awaiting. But in Asia, Desecheo is number 2 most wanted, and in Europe it's number 3 most wanted entity in the DXCC list. And so we are taking great pains to study our propagation windows so we can take advantage of those really short openings to Asia and to Europe. We don't have the luxury of being there for a month, so we can learn by trial and error, but we have to be on top of our propagation studies from the very first day. So, and I think our biggest problem, because it still is most high on the most wanted list in the United States and North America, is having our North American station stand by while we operate the windows. We're going to be on the northwest corner of the island, and our beam headings are within 100 degrees of Asia, North America, and Europe, our target areas. And then we have some good long path openings. We have a mountain between us and Africa, but we should have very good clear coverage between us and Europe.
You mentioned stateside. The expedition is always a very expensive operation. The Northern California and the X Foundation will again be one of the main supporters. May we, in that connection, say congratulations to you?
Yes, we've received funding and donations from all over the world, from DX groups and individuals in Europe and Asia and all over North America. And the Northern California DX Foundation has been our biggest contributor so far.
Yeah, but you take a special role in that foundation now?
Well, I do now. Just last week, W6OAT, Rusty Epps, has been a director of the Northern California DX Foundation for 35 years, and he retired from his work a few years ago and is now retiring from his job on the NCDXF. And I was asked to fill his shoes, so I'm the newest director of the Northern California DX Foundation. So at the same meeting, I've seen the agenda. Before I was voted in, there was voted a donation for our de-expedition. So there's not any conflict of interest, at least at that time.
Anyway, congratulations. Glenn, you are a surgeon by profession. May we learn a bit more about your personal background?
Yes, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm in solo practice by myself in northern Minnesota, and I specialize, if anything, in knee replacement surgery. In fact, the president of the NCDXF called and said, the reason we ask you to join us is because we're all going to need knee surgery because we're down on our knees begging for money all the time. that was funny, but it's true that the Northern Cal DX Foundation received a very large fund of money from Lee Shackleton, W6BH, in 1972 as a primary source of funds. And the interest from the investments have been used to fund de-expeditions. And the Northern California De-Expedition, or DX Fund Foundation, over the last 15 years or so, has given almost $600,000 to de-expeditions. And without the help of Northern Cal, the expeditions would never have taken place.
Okay, Glenn, I kept the big question for the final. This operation is called the KP1-KP5 project. Will there be a Navassa Island KP1 expedition later on?
Well, that's the plan. If we do well and perform well and treat the environment well while we're there, and the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to be watching us, they'll have someone in our camp, at least one person for security reasons, they will most likely invite applications for KP1 just like they invited applications for KP5. So that's our hope. If we do well, if we live up to our calling on KP5, hopefully within the next year or so, we'll also activate KP1.
So let our fingers keep crossed for luck. Glenn, we do hope that we'll talk again before, during, and after the operation with you and Bob Alpin, the other co-leader. I'm Oscar Echo 1, Whiskey Hotel Charlie, Wolf Harland, talking to Dr. Glenn Johnson, Whiskey Zero, Golf Juliet.
Thank you, Wolf. Have a good day.